What percentage of the hike did you, or the trek did you actually walk approximately?
I don't know the percentage. I would say a lot of it was definitely done with motorbikes, which is almost harder than walking because it's just so painful on your rear end, and it's always bouncing and you're falling, like literally falling off the bike. But I would say in total, I don't think I walked more than 300 kilometers. So it was definitely less than 10. I would say maybe maximum 10% of the actual entire journey was done by walking. Most of it was canoes, shitty bikes, most of it. And yeah, I would say less than 10% was actually walking.
And you took 3 months almost to do the whole trek. Yeah. And you had a 3 month visa.
Yeah, because sometimes like the bike would break down. I had to walk like, let's say, 30 kilometers or 20 kilometers to a village, get another bike. Then the bike would take me a few hundreds, then another 20. So yeah, it wasn't that hard in terms of walking, but I actually preferred walking over bikes because you can really take in the atmosphere. It's not hard on your back at all. It's much slower, but also healthier in a way. You're doing it at your pace. And yeah, I don't know if you went on bikes. I mean, you had your own car in the DRC, but their bikes are not good. They're overloaded, and then the guy takes you on it and you give him money. But you know, I'm surprised I don't have lower back pain to this day, because sometimes you feel like you have permanent nerve damage. It's really bad. And then it slides in the mud, you fall over, you hurt yourself, you get back on it. Yeah, but walking is great. The butterflies are all around you, and it's beautiful.
Speaking about permanent damage, you have now the malaria living in your liver right now. And yeah. Why didn't you take prophylactics and protection?
Because I had gotten it in Sudan in 2019 already. It was my second time getting malaria. I think you had it six times in Africa, right? Yeah. You had it six times.
Six times, yeah.
So the thing is, and you know that yourself, like Westerners always think of malaria as this deadly disease that's super dangerous. And it is deadly. But in Africa, because they're kind of used to it, when, you know, you learn that if you take the treatment pretty soon when you have the symptoms, usually you'll be fine, usually.
Yeah.
And most of the deaths, I think, are infants and babies as well. So I just thought, you know, I'm going to be there for 3 months. Do I really want to take the drug for 3 months? I mean, I was also in Angola and other countries. So do I want to take the drug for 6 months preemptively? Or do I want to take the risk of getting it and then just taking the curative pills? And I prefer taking the curative pills. I'd rather, if I'm going to be there for a very long period of time, like, you know, Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Kenya, I'd rather just take the cure if I get sick. I feel like it's easier on your liver and your organs than to take a preemptive pill for half a year or even a year.
Totally. I understand that.
Did you take them?
No, I didn't take it. I mean, once I got it, it's fine. You know, even in the remote villages, they may not have electricity. They may not have running water. They may not have communications, but they'll always have anti-malarial pills, even in the villages.
True.
There'll be a little boutique somewhere that you'll be able to get those anti-malarial pills in even the most remote places. It's amazing.
For them, it's like the flu almost at this point. It's
absolutely,
like,
absolutely. It is like the flu completely. So that's totally true. What about any kind of gastrointestinal problems? I know you had some of them.
Oh yeah, I had so many. I mean, it's funny. I had diarrhea for literally almost a year. And
wait,
like,
hold on. Yeah. How did you purify water, or did you not? You just drank water.
That's the thing. I thought I'm going to go hardcore and just be I thought I'm going to get sick from this, but that's fine. I'll cure myself later. I don't want to have, because I felt like if I'm going to be with the locals and they're offering me water and I start purifying it in front of them, you know, I figured, look, they're drinking that type of water. I'll just try my best to follow what they're doing. I'll probably get sick and get a bunch of problems with my stomach, but I'll fix that later. So, yeah, you're right. They would drink like literal river water. So I'd had my bottle and they would say, okay, we're going to go fill it with water. And they'd bring you to a stream, but it's not a clean stream. It's almost like a swamp. And yeah, of course, I got Giardia, which is a pretty nasty parasite. And it wreaked havoc on my stomach. I had, at one point I was, bowel movement every half an hour sort of thing, and just terrible health condition. And I got diagnosed in Iraq. At some point, I was in Iraq, and I thought, this is not normal. Clearly, I'm carrying something. So I just went to the doctor, did some tests, and then they said, yeah, you have Giardia. So it took me a long time to cure it. Now it's totally gone, so I'm happy. I'm back to normal, healthy. But yeah, it was rough on my system, definitely.
I would have taken a SteriPen or something along those lines that has UV, and you just have to, you know, stir it around just because, I mean, you're brave. I mean, you, but you're going to get sick. I mean, if you're going to take the local.
I knew that before. And I was like,
even the locals, I mean, they don't talk too much about it, but if you talk to them about it, a lot of locals have diarrhea almost all the time.
Oh, yeah. Just, oh, yeah.
You know? It's just their natural state of existence.
Absolutely.
Know, nobody has solid poop. Everybody shits liquid.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it goes. It's so true. Any parting thoughts regarding the DRC journey? I'll have you back in a future podcast, but I just wanted to wrap this one up. Thoughts on the DRC? Things, surprises, for example?
Yeah, well... It's first of all, it's much bigger than people imagine, because even once you're inside
the size of Western Europe.
Yes. And then the speed at which you're going to be traveling is way lower than in Western Europe. So, you know, you could be at a place where sometimes I was on a river, there was no other transport than to take man-powered canoes, you know, and you're going against the stream. If you're doing 15 kilometers in a day, that's a good day. If you're doing 20, let's say. So calculate that, you know, 20 kilometers in a day. If you got to do 100 kilometers, that's going to take you 5 days just to get to 100 kilometers. So take a lot of time. If you're going to cross the DRC, that's why I had my 3-month visa. And even then, it took me 3 months to cross. So I was lucky. You want time. If you don't have time, that's when you get stressed. And that's when you have to pay bribes because you want to pass quickly. If you have time on your side, it's easier for you to negotiate. You have more bargaining power. You really need a lot of time to cross. Don't underestimate it. Don't take a 1-month visa and think you're going to cross it quickly. It's a recipe for disaster. You need either a lot of money. If you're rich, then of course you can pay bribes more quickly. But other than that, just take your time. Get a long visa. And by the way, the visa is hard to get. I got mine in Burundi. I speak French and I got friendly with the ambassador and I got the visa in Bujumbura, Burundi. But I've heard now that people cannot get it anymore. So it's kind of hit and miss. You have to beg officials in different embassies to get it.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest visas to get when you're not in your home country, for sure. And I admire that you were able to get it. That was great. All right. Well, I want to have you back to talk about the DRC on a kind of a future sense. Like, you know, does the country have any hope? Is there, will it finally be able to achieve its incredible potential because it has so many resources and it's such a vast place? But that's a whole nother conversation that we'll dive into on a future date. And of course, your upcoming travels. But for now, I encourage everybody to go to the links, follow the links below to go to see your article and learn more about your journey. And I really appreciate your time. And that ends this episode of the Wander Learn podcast, where we explore travel, technology, and transformation. If you'd like to see the show notes with links to what we've talked about, go to wanderlearn.com and click on this episode. If you'd like to connect with me, just remember F. Tapon. That's my first initial and my last name. F. Tapon is always my social media username. My website is ftapon.com. Do you want to leave me an anonymous voicemail where you can make a comment or ask a question? Then go to speakpipe.com/ftapon. Furthermore, if you'd like to get rewarded for supporting my projects, then go to patreon.com/ftapon. That's where you can pick up some remarkable rewards for as little as $2 a month. Now, 5 quick favors. Number 1, subscribe to the Wander Learn podcast. 2, download it. 3, share it. 4, review it. And 5, sign up for my newsletter at wanderlearn.com. Our theme music was composed by Eric Stratman. This is Francis Tapon encouraging you to wander and learn.